This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Parts of the La Crosse Center are 35 years old, and officials with the City of La Crosse believe it's time for a facelift and perhaps much more that will help La Crosse be even more successful in attracting events like bigger conventions. A consultant recently came up with a $75 million list of improvements to the La Crosse Center, and community members have shared their thoughts on helping to shape what the Civic Center will look like in the future. Joining us in this hour to discuss the possibilities are La Crosse Center Director Art Fahey and Brent Smith, the president of the La Crosse Center Board. Smith began the conversation telling Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis that the improvements have been needed for some time.
Could have been done 5 or 10 years ago, because really the improvements that are there and the age of some of the improvements, the need for goes back many years. But I think this time we're going to try to do everything at once, put it all together into one package, not only updating some of the outdated things, but also try to do something to the west side of the center and try to do something with we call the flow in the center. So we're going to try to do it all at one time. But certainly the items that we have that we're going to be looking at as far as updating or getting current could have made the same argument 5 or 10 years ago.
Art, from your perspective, how long has this been needed?
Well, just so you got a quick background on the center, the original center was built in 1980, and that included the arena and what we call the North Hall and the Zilke Suite, and then we expanded in 2000. And that part of the building that was built 15 years ago, we think is in pretty good shape. There's a couple little things we'd like to do there, but between the arena and the North Hall and the Z Suite is where we really think there's some tender loving care that needs to be done. Timing-wise, you think about it, 2008 wasn't a good social economic time at the time. So, things have rebounded. There's a lot of good things happening in La Crosse, and we're starting to get feedback. You're starting to look dated. People have been very kind about it. But, there is definitely a facelift needed for that portion of the building that was built in 1980.
What kind of shape is La Crosse Center in from a mechanical standpoint and also a structural standpoint?
Well, from a mechanical standpoint, I mean, we've got a lot of things that come to us on our maintenance lists that are coming at us a lot here. I mean, just the other day I got fire doors that need to be changed. I mean, there's no question. That's $15,000. We tried to do some portable walls in the North Hall several years ago to replace those. And when we went to replace them, we were going to phase them in over a number of years. Well, we couldn't do that because technology of 1980 didn't match up to 2010. And so it was either all or nothing type of project. And that was almost a $500,000 project right there. So, we can keep going. We're putting bandages on things, but, you get an air exchanger that goes down. We had a $200,000 chiller that went down. We replaced that. So, the maintenance that we've deferred over a long time is starting coming to home to rest on us now, and we got to take care of it.
There's a certain amount of sticker shock that comes with that $75 million
yes.
list. Could you talk about how that was arrived at?
Well, that was through a process by which we've actually had two consultants, one kind of outlining where he thought our needs were, and then the second one's putting them actually in drawings and coming up with some cost estimates. But they're both nationally known consultants. One of them we had used before with the La Crosse Center. So these are people who have a lot of experience in our industry and our business, and they put those numbers together. I think, John, you're right, the $75 million is a sticker shock. It was the instructions that we got from the mayor and the council were asked for everything, and we'll see. We'll see. But I doubt, I think Art and I have talked enough and our board, that the likelihood that our board or the council and the mayor, who ultimately have the decision, would go with everything is, I would think, extremely unlikely.
I assume it's a wish list, but some of the items are fairly serious.
Yeah, there are some certain things that are necessity. We did, and that's correct to call it a wish list, because that's exactly what we did. We did it with staff, we did it with board, we did it with public input, put it on the table, and what does that look like? And that's where the $75 million came in. There are certain things, like I mentioned, like the portable air walls or the seating within the arena. There are some air HVAC issues that need to be dealt with. Those are definitely, deferred maintenance that we got to take care of. There's a certain portion of this that, we've prioritized that said, this is what we have to do. Here's what we really would like to do. And here's something that, well, we could do without, but, you know, we'll put it out there and see where it goes.
So what does $75 million buy you these days?
A lot, yeah. Really. You know, three main things that we've looked at and that $75 million would cover. Some of the deferred maintenance items that Art has talked about. A significant change to the western part of our building going out towards the water, and would be, we think, very exciting, actually going out further, another ballroom. That would be part of that. And three, people have, you know, commented to us that the flow of the building isn't real well, that they have trouble getting from one side of the building to the other. It's confusion as to where to go in for certain events. And so the actual flow for the building would be changed, and we'd put more lobby in and actually have it, you know, kind of a be able to go all around the building and flow better. So $75 million is a lot of money, but we'd get, if the council and the mayor decided that's what they want to do, we'd get a lot of bang for our buck.
So how much of this wish list is for actual expansion of the center versus aesthetic improvements?
You know, we've got a list that we got from an architect, design architect on this. And, you know, if you look at the $75 million as a whole, about $30 million, 29 I believe was the number, was the internal portion of it. So about $45 million was external and dealing with, as Brent was referring to, the flow, because as we've grown, we've kind of departmentalized the building, and that's where it's got a little complicated for pedestrian walk around the building.
Is an expansion needed?
I think we would put more of an emphasis on the deferred maintenance and some reshaping of the western side of the building as opposed to actually an expansion. There is going to be, if everything was approved here, and there would be some added space. But the emphasis is on the deferred maintenance, making something special on the west side, and the flow. So the expansion's there, but our consultants said, and again, these people are advising convention centers all across the country, is you're not, if you did too much of an expansion, you're not going to get that bang for your buck, because that's not going to automatically mean that you get more business.
There isn't a lot of room to expand anyway down there, is there? I mean, you could go toward the Radisson Center, but I don't know if that's part of this or not.
Well, the drawings that we are looking at, the things we're talking about, we got pretty creative. You know, you're right, there is an awful lot because we're kind of landlocked there. But in the back of the building on the west side, where we're talking about doing something special over there, we're actually talking about putting a ballroom with a terrace that overlooked the river, because we think we got one of the best views in the country there. That we're not taking advantage of. We could actually do that on, stilts, if you will, and still have the parking lot in the back and go all the way to the road, if not even go over the top of the road and, to the edge of the Riverside Park. The Radisson Center location is one, if we put it in our priority list, you know, 4 of 4, because that's probably the only natural way we can go, and that particular lot would work nicely with the South Hall and the existing ballroom, and we could easily blend into that another lobby to make the flow go from J Street all the way to the Pearl Street walkway.
Yeah, location really is not the problem for the La Crosse Center. You couldn't have a better location in the city.
Right, exactly. Right. No, yeah. It's tremendous. And especially, and which we haven't done in the past, is take advantage of that river and that water, because that's something that not many other facilities in Wisconsin, Minnesota, or Iowa have the ability to do. And that's one of the things we've got to do with this project.
So let's talk a little bit about how these projects could be funded. I assume that this is not something where the La Crosse Center would be asking the city to fund through the capital improvement program, which I know is for a lot of other things like street improvements and sewer and water and that type of thing. So I assume you're going to have a special sort of funding mechanism for this?
Right. Yeah, it is. You know, you're right. The capital improvement that you're referring to is a limited budget right there. And we did put some placeholders in there. That is only a fraction of what the whole project would look like. On a smaller scale, you know, we've over the last 15 years have been able to put together a little bit of a reserve of our own that we can contribute to, and that's to the tune of approaching $1 million. Capital budget, we were talking about $1 million. There's a other variety of things that we've done. In fact, the expansion we did in 2000, we were working with room tax dollars. which is the hotel room tax. And then there was a facility fee dollar that was also helped to reduce the debt service on it. Then we did have to go to bonding for it. In addition to that, though, there's been discussion, you know, there's funds that we're discovering that are available at the state level that we are going to be approaching. And then even on the private level, I'm talking about some naming rights, you know, in areas that we can name, because the arena already is set there, but the naming right portion of it. So it's quite a blend of private, public, and some of our own money that we might be able to generate it from the Lacrosse Center.
How does the Lacrosse Center budget work now? Are a lot of tax dollars flowing to help fund the Lacrosse Center? Or?
Well, I guess there's a definition of how we operate. And we've got about a $2.1 million budget. And roughly we've got a little over $400,000 that comes from room tax currently on our operating budget. The balance of that we have to generate and deliver a zero debt to the city, if you will, at the end of an operating year budget. Now, we also participate in the capital improvement projects, and that usually is limited to equipment, and we sometimes see $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 on equipment there. So it's not a tremendous amount of money in the scope of things. And then debt service, we don't pay for debt service. So we're not a utility, but we're not really a department. We're kind of a highbrow of the two. So, you know, we're one of those few, by definition of how we operate, facilities around the country that can pay for itself up to the limits that we've been outlined here. So we've been very fortunate. I mean, it wasn't obvious that way, but fortunately for the last 15 years, we've been able to pull that off.
Right. If you look at convention centers across the country, John, the majority of them are in the red. And while for the great majority of the years that the Lacrosse Center has been in existence, in the very high majority, we've been in the black. So we have been very fortunate, as Art said, and we want to be able to continue that. We don't want to have to go back to the city at the end of the year and ask for more money. The idea in other places in the country, the idea is that the center or convention center is kind of a magnet, and the businesses around it benefit by it, so that even if the city does go into or the facility goes into the red, it's okay. They understand it. But that isn't the approach we've taken in Lacrosse, and we certainly want to continue that.
Let's take these one at a time, if we could. The room tax, for example, how much money do you get from the room tax?
On an annual basis, we're getting roughly about $450,000. And that, you know, with the influx of new hotels here, we've got four more hotels coming. And just as of our discussions today, there was another hotel being discussed in the city. So, you know, that number, you know, is gonna go up.
Ticket surcharges?
Ticket surcharge is more modest, you know, and that it's 75 cents on a ticket during the course of the year. So that ranges anywhere from about $50,000 to $60,000 on an annual basis, but it's still significant when we talk about debt service.
John, you realize I say that Milwaukee copied us, you know, for the Bucks or New Arena.
Yeah.
They did. The big item that was controversial was the ticket surcharge. And they were trying to figure out some other ways to finance that, and they came around to that idea. So I always say to my friends in Milwaukee, you must have copied Lacrosse.
What about naming rights? Are you getting anything for naming rights?
Currently, we're not. The arena is itself the Mary E. Sawyer Auditorium. That was back in the 60s when those funds came in, and that was there was never a sunset on that. It's
kind
a lifelong.
Named after the original Mary E. Sawyer.
Exactly.
Auditorium, right?
Exactly. So that name came across from the old facility, which was on 4th and Lacrosse Streets, to the facility that's at right now. So currently, no, we are not getting any naming rights. We did run that up the pole a few years ago, and at that time, the sentiment was that you know, it's the Lacrosse Center. It belongs to the city. It doesn't belong to a company. So we did not pursue that any further at that time.
Any indication from council members or the mayor about the naming rights issue and looking at this $75 million and saying we could potentially get a few million dollars?
I think the idea of naming rights has been floated out there, but I think Art's right that I don't think the sentiment has changed that we would be able to call the Lacrosse Center the Quick Trip Center or the Festival Food Center. I don't think maybe we could do something with rooms, portions of the center, but I would not think that the council and mayor would be interested in letting us rename the building.
Any indication that there's a possibility we could do things like raise the room tax in the city or the ticket surcharge another quarter to get more money for this project?
I'm thinking that the room tax is probably where it's, you know, the 2% would be where we would be looking at this. Don't you, Art? Or?
Yeah, I don't think the room, I think we're almost at the cap on the room tax right now for the state limits. The ticket surcharge, that's certainly something could be discussed. It has been thrown out there to see where that could go, because it's a facility fee that, you know, we try to keep our prices as modest as we can, you know, so that the end user doesn't get too hard. But that it could be also part of the discussion.
So how creative can you get with funding?
I'll defer to Art a little bit, but I think in Art will, I think, defer to some of the other people in City Hall who are probably a little more talented than I would say than Art and I at coming up ways to fund it. And certainly there's been meetings that Art's been at within City Finance, Mayor, and others who this subject has been had. And ultimately, of course, it's their decision, not the center board's. But there's certainly ongoing discussions about that issue.
Yeah, you know, and when we talked about, you know, the old way, which was bonding, facility fee, or ticket surcharge, and room tax, those are the three that we obviously go back to again, because the debt on the original expansion 2015 is retired. So, you know, we've got those funds that we potentially could look at. And then the new things are, you know, what might be available at state, because that's a new area that that state has stepped up, and they hadn't had that before. And then some kind of naming rights or some kind of private venture, because there has been some interest in that in the past over the years, you know, of trying to get some kind of private-public blend going in there.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about the potential for renovations at the La Crosse Center, which is 35 years old. Our guests on today's show are La Crosse Center Board President Brent Smith and La Crosse Center Director Art Fahey. I assume you want to get as many of these items on this list as possible and are probably also realist enough to know that $50 million in bonding may not be very popular with the city residents of the city council.
That's for sure, and I think that's why we had our board in the last couple weeks went through a prioritizing process, and we actually said our top two would be the west side and the deferred maintenance that Art referred to, and probably that flow, although we think it's very important, would probably be down in the last position. So, and we tried to even rank some of the ones within those categories that I just named. So we've gone through that process, recognizing exactly what you just said, that it may not, the council and the mayor may not say $75 million is the number, and it'd probably be less. And they've asked us, and of course we have a city council member on our center board, and the mayor's been at meetings, and the meeting that we had where we had public input, the mayor was certainly at that meeting. So we're getting and continue to get input on what is our priorities.
The state of Wisconsin has certainly stepped up in other communities. They just helped fund the Milwaukee Bucks new arena. They've had input into the Brewers Stadium, Lambeau Field. I think the Confluence Project in Eau Claire.
Correct.
What do you think the chances are they would help out the La Crosse Center? Well, and how much could that potentially be?
Well, the how much is still a big question. I don't know that answer. I think they would step up, you know, and we've talked to some of our representatives, and a key point in that is, you know, can we bring business that wouldn't steal away from a sister Wisconsin city? And the answer is, to me, yes. You know, because we're on the border here of some tri-state business activity, and to me that could really bring in some business from Minnesota and Iowa. And we, you know, we're kind of looking at, when you asked about earlier about the type of business, you know, the type of business we're talking about on the west side, you know, is a ballroom, and to me that you know, defines things like corporate business could be brought in there. We're not seeing a lot of that just because of the nature of the type of building we are, but we could see, I think, a lot more corporate business with an expansion we're talking about. And, you know, the project coup, you know, we talk about funding on this, could be phased in, and that's definitely a discussion. You know, if it doesn't have to be done in 1 year, you know, ideally, sure, you know. So, you know, and you kind of look around the pushback on that, but I think there was a lot of businesses in the downtown area that wouldn't exist if the La Crosse Center wasn't there, you know, because that was, you know, you go back to 1978, that was a sandlot, you know, back then. And, you know, we've certainly, I think it's a city, taken advantage of that beautiful river.
What is the city missing out on because of the condition of the La Crosse Center?
Well, I think there's some things that come our way that, you know, like I'll give you an example, the Wisconsin State Cheesemakers. It's not the condition of the building. It's just that we're departmentalized. You know, we've got these choke points that go from room to room, and they like one big contiguous room. Now, they would look at us. There's some people that have got some strong ties in the Wisconsin Cheesemaker Group that make decisions that would probably come back to us. And the key to this is, you know, if we do these kind of things, these are the kind of events that we have are multiple small events. We discovered that when we expanded, we didn't all of a sudden have the Moses Organic Farmers Conference every year. That's kind of a rarity. Mm-hmm. But we do see three and sometimes four events on a single period of time, you know, overlapping mm-hmm. each other that come to the building. So, there's some things we're in a rotation within the state. And sometimes it's very easy to say, we're going to go back to Green Bay twice and skip you. And I mean, if they skip us, that rotation could be every 2 or 3 years, and we don't see them for every 4 to 6 years. And that, we start feeling that. It doesn't take long to start feeling that impact. And I think we're starting at that point right now. You know, we could continue doing what we're doing and still drive expenses down and try to drive the revenue. But at some point, the revenue expense line is going to cross, and we'll be coming back to the city for some kind of support.
Well, I think it's not only getting what we might miss out on, it's retaining what we have, which is important, and we obviously have been successful at that from a financial point of view. But it's also the competing against, as Art was saying, the Green Bays of the world, the Stevens Points, and the Rochesters, and competing. And if we can do what we're setting out here to do, and especially I think that West Side, where that was going to make us unique. And so when a convention planner or a big event planner is looking at those three or four spots, he or she's going to say, boy, that lacrosse is unique. It stands out. Nobody else can do this.
The river will be the wow factor.
Exactly. That's what we've. And you know that, I'll just put a plug in for our board. That was our board that came up with that idea. That was not one of these consultants who did very great work and deserve credit. But that was our board at a meeting that said, we've got to do more of that West Side. Why haven't we done more with that West Side? So it shows a little bit sometimes that, the local boards can have very valuable ideas, and that came from our board.
You've talked about how it could help with conventions, how it could help with local corporate events. What about things like the death metal concerts and Sesame Street Live or the circus? You're not suddenly going to attract different types of those events, are you?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, when you've got the concert or family entertainment experience, you know, our chairs that are in there are original chairs from 1980. And one of the things about those chairs and even the ADA seating, you know, we're living with 1980 specs. So, you know, there's chairs are wearing out. Our population's expanded. The needs for ADA have changed significantly. And when acts come in, you know, if they can drive the bottom line, they're probably going to come. But if you got a brand new thing to be selling, you know, the acts also recognize that's a hot market. You know, we've been a pretty good market for, the active rock and modern country. And we've got our family shows that come in, and I think we're doing very well with them. But, you always want to, be right there, be in the throes of the competition. And, you know, there's a lot of buildings. I mean, you look back in 1980, the buildings that were in Wisconsin, a lot of them aren't here, or they've done something with themselves over the course of the last 35 years. And, you know, we just feel it's time for us to give that facelift.
So I wanted to get back to the hotel issue. We have four going up, a potential fifth. We now have enough hotel space to support larger conventions in La Crosse?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've always had enough hotel space to do what, you know, some of our larger ones are 2,500, 3,000 people, and these will certainly help. And it also helps to get people closer to the facility. It gives people a more wide range of places, choices to make, probably choices on prices that they would pay. So overall, it's a win-win. Convention planners, and Art can correct me, but they look for choices in the mm-hmm. hotels. They look at proximity. And we've got it now, or we're going to have it within a year.
Will you be able to get larger conventions? Is that something that a La Crosse Center expansion would help with, or maybe you don't want to do that?
Well, we would certainly accept larger ones. Yeah. You know, I mean, and with the hotels in the downtown area that Brent was referring to, you're going to be within walking distance of a lot of these, and that potential certainly is right there before us.
What did you hear from the public in this charrette process?
It was all positive, quite frankly. But I think we did hear, if I had to say, that the the West, that wow factor, and deferred maintenance. It was pretty close. They were there as to what people would put as it. But those two, and probably this flow issue, which we talk about and we think is important, probably is a little down on the list as compared to we got to update that building and we've got to get that wow factor.
Right. Yeah, I didn't see many people saying, they didn't say no. They said, here's what we think you should do. You know, and it was that was an interesting perspective. And, you know, sometimes they've got ideas, you know, like, you know, local art. You know, make sure you've got the greenery there, you know, and just those kind of things you kind of just say, boy, you know, those are the things that make the difference. And, you know, sometimes you just overlook that when you're trying to put the, excuse me, the brick and mortar up.
So what is the timeline for this project?
Yeah, I we're at a stage now we're hoping to get, we have to get some definite numbers that the council would have to approve actually going out and getting these. These are really the ones we got, the $75 million were estimates at best. And so we would have to get real numbers. So that would involve more drawings, more numbers. So that's probably not back in front of the council, John, until next year that would actually be a vote on it, I think, to actually do it. Then the decision the council will have to make based on funding is do we do it all at once or do we kind of phase it in over time? So, guy, we hope, you know, somebody puts a shovel in, you know, it'd be great if it could happen next year, a shovel in. It might be 2017 before you put a shovel in, and it may be all at once or it could be phased in.
Yeah, and the other factor, you know, we still want to continue to do business with right. The existing clients that we've got coming in and not disrupt them. So, you know, all that has to be taken consideration as we move forward.
So the current center is 35 years old. If all or some of these improvements are made, what does the future of La Crosse Center look like, or how good are we now? Are we good for another 35 years?
Well, as Art said earlier, you know, we actually did some of the work. The addition was in 2000, so we actually went about 20 years before we did the addition. So, no, you're going to keep, John, you've got to keep updating. You know, maybe a big project is another 20, 25 years off,
right.
but you've got to keep updating, or you're for all the reasons we've talked about in the last half hour, you fall behind, and you fall behind those competitors who are doing those type of things. And we're competing against other facilities who are doing that updating. And you mentioned some of them. Eau Claire, Rochester's got a plan. You go to Wisconsin Dells. You go to Stevens Point, Green Bay. They've all had done work on their properties.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that people need to just take, you know, into consideration. We're not competing somebody just down the road. We're competing, you know, at least regionally.
Is there anything else here that one of you want to add?
Well, I think we stress always two things about the La Crosse Center and the importance. Importance, obviously, the downtown economy, that you talk to the hoteliers, you talk to the restaurants, you talk to the shops. But it's also important as to the quality of life for La Crosse, for people who are looking to come to La Crosse and are making the decision to stay in La Crosse. They're doing it in part, I hope, because of some of the events that we have at the La Crosse Center. What is available, it's the music, it's sports, it's a whole variety of circuses. So, yes, we do it because we have an economic impact, but also on the quality of life, and it overall, it's I think it's proven to be a wonderful thing for this community.
Yeah, and I would just add that you know, it is not uncommon for us to get calls and saying, "How did you get your center built?" Because you know, a lot of cities our size are looking, "How did you do it? We just can't get this put together, and we can't get it done." And I think La Crosse has got a gem here on the river that, you know, has been a factor and for 35 years, and hopefully for another 35 years, it can really add to the quality of life here, as Brent referring to. But, you know, it's something to be proud of that we've got here, and it's a big special building.
Art Fahey is director of the La Crosse Center. Brent Smith is the president of the La Crosse Center Board. They spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about a $75 million list of renovations for the 35-year-old Civic Center that City of La Crosse leaders will consider in the weeks ahead. To hear archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers, where you'll also find a link to the consultant's report about those possible changes for the La Crosse Center. Coming up, how some Wisconsin technical colleges, including La Crosse-based Western Tech, are working to prepare students for careers with the aerospace industry. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Thank you. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. There was a time that to get experience to prepare for a career in aerospace, one had to leave this area. But that's changing. In recent years, Western Technical College, based in La Crosse, has been part of the Wisconsin Space Grant Consortium. Western's physics instructor, Mike Ladoc, faculty mentor for the Tethered Aerostat program, explained to Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum why Western got involved in the consortium.
My background is in aerospace engineering and space physics, and so that's an area that I'm very interested in. I had been involved with some space grant activities a few previous years when I was at UWL, UW-La Crosse. And I just continued working with them, and that eventually led to our membership in the group.
And what exactly does the group do when they work together or work individually, too?
Well, the Wisconsin Space Grant Consortium is one of 52 space grant consortia. There's one in every state, in D.C. and Puerto Rico. This is probably one of the most successful educational outreach arms of NASA. So this is a NASA-funded program. And in a lot of ways, the Space Grant Consortium is sort of the local face of NASA, since we don't have a NASA center here in Wisconsin. We do have a lot of educators, a lot of business folks, and students that are interested in the types of science that NASA does. And so we're a way of bringing NASA to Wisconsin.
So then is the Tethered Aerostat program, is that just sort of a branch of the consortium or just one of the projects that sort of comes out of it?
That's one of the projects. It's a very new project. Yeah, the Space Grant Consortium helps aerospace education at like all levels. There we have programs that help support K-12 educators. We have programs that support graduate and undergraduate research. We have scholarships and actually help faculty members with their own development. So this particular program, the Tethered Aerostat program, came about because of a grant opportunity that NASA put a call for. The Wisconsin Consortium said, you know, we've got some ideas, and we have some folks that have worked with these tethered aerostats or tethered blimps in the past, and the consortium decided to submit an application to this project. This particular NASA opportunity was to try to encourage more involvement of students at a two-year college or community college type level. And so Wisconsin Space Grant said, we've worked with some tethered aerostats. This would be a great program to bring to our two-year college members. And got funded for that last year. And so this is a real new program for Wisconsin Space Grant. We're hoping that it's going to become successful and maybe even continue into a regular program in the future.
So before we dive into what exactly you all have been doing at Western, what exactly is it that these tethered aerostats or these tethered blimps can do? It seems like they can do quite a bit.
Yeah, really kind of a neat platform. You can purchase these blimps in a variety of different sizes. They're very similar to what you might think of as a hot air balloon or a dirigible. So people have been kind of revisiting what can we do with, you know, sort of lighter than aircraft in the last several years. These are basically like balloons, so they're tied in place. You know, so the tethering means we've got something solid on the ground holding in place. We don't really fly it around. But then you can design a variety of experiments that you can use the balloon to lift up into the air. So these are really useful for doing atmospheric studies. If you want to learn about atmospheric conditions, humidity, pressure, wind speeds, you can put cameras on them and look back down and observe something like forest health or river or lake temperatures, so you can do environmental monitoring that way. Or you can use it to lift experiments that you just want up in the air off the ground. And so and of course there are other applications too in private sector and military. And so what we have are some reasonably small aerostats, and we're able to lift a payload of something like 5 to 7 pounds,
oh, wow.
up to about 500 feet. So that's what they're rated to. You can actually get permission to fly them higher if you need to. They're filled with helium, so they're pretty inert and safe. The aerostats that we have, I think, can fly somewhere up to maybe a week at a time if we wanted to. So you could even have these aerostats up in the air for a long period of time, so you could take environmental monitoring, say, for days or a week at a time.
And so you've been working with 9 students over the last year, is that correct?
That's right, yep.
And what exactly have you all been using these blimps, these aerostats, for at Western?
At Western, the students that are part of the program at Western come from a variety of fields in electronics and mechanical design, areas like that. And the experiment that they chose to work on is actually something called microwave power beaming or microwave power transfer. And this would be using microwaves instead of, say, an electrical cord, to move electricity from one place to another. So this is something that I think particularly our electronics students are really kind of excited about. And the idea, for example, to use something like that would be wireless charging of cell phones. Then we're seeing some of that happening these days. In the aerospace sector, for many years, people have thought, if we can put large solar panels on orbit to collect electricity and then we can beam it down to the Earth, that would really increase the efficiency of solar panels. Perhaps we can use microwaves to just shoot electrical energy to a small satellite on orbit, and that would reduce the need to have tanks of fuel or something like that. And so there's a lot of interesting applications for this kind of research, and it really kind of sparked the students' interest. And so that's what we're working on.
But is this sort of related Tesla's idea years ago to have wireless electricity? Like I said, I'm probably not saying this correctly, but
right.
Along those same lines?
Well, and those sorts of ideas have been around for a long time. And so it would really reduce the need for wires. And again, for beaming power from space, solar panels are much more efficient if you get them above our atmosphere. And so you could collect a lot more solar energy and then send it down to a receiving station on Earth, which is kind of nice. Saves a lot of space on the surface of the Earth and reduces the need for wires. And it's really neat if we can find technologies like this that would allow us to unplug a lot of our appliances even. Yeah, make things a little simpler.
So this is research that could have impressive applications in the real world. That must be so exciting for you and the students.
It really is, yeah. And there are other folks out on the East Coast working with NASA on similar projects, and we've seen some breakthroughs in cell phone recharging technology from other sectors. And, yeah, I think the applications for it can be really widespread, and it is. It's really exciting, and it's just a really interesting technology to look forward to.
Can you talk about how unique of an experience this is for the students that you're working with and how important it is to have this program for them?
Absolutely. This is a new kind of experience for us at Western. Western doesn't have a lot of real formal research programs. And one of the areas that NASA has tried to increase its presence in the last several years, last decade or so, is to see how can NASA affect two-year college students and community college students. And so we don't have formal scientific research. We have a lot of hands-on experience. We have a spectacular classroom and a community experience. So this is expanding into a new area for us at Western. So now these students have a chance to really conduct a science experiment in a way that NASA is used to running experiments. And so they've had a chance to write planning reports. They've done some very formal note-taking, a lot of in-lab experimentation. And this is something that they will be able to take with them as experience and say, I did research that was funded by NASA. And that's a pretty important thing to do. You know, it looks good. It's nice to put on your resume.
For sure. And then will the 9 students be sticking around for the second year of the program, or do you get a new batch of students? Do you continue the same research or find a new focus?
Right. I think the ultimate goal of this program is to try to develop sort of a long-term experimental program. So the current group of students that we have right now have plans to remain on for the second year. So this particular program is funded for 2 years, so it's kind of a two-year foray into this. We're going to see how well it works. So all the students at Western are still planning to be enrolled here next year, so they'll be part of this full two-year program. If the Wisconsin Space Consortium reapplies or renews the program, then hopefully we'll be able to bring a few of the present students along the way and bring some experience along to a new batch also. And in the future, this may end up becoming a mix of first-year and second-year students so that we have sort of a continuous turnover, but also a connection from the previous year's work.
And then who knows what each of the students wants to do in their future, but is there a possibility then potentially for if they move on to another school, could they continue studying these different fields? I mean, I know probably with funding and equipment, it could be different, but I don't know if you've heard
right.
anything about the students, what they're thinking about their future.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you check in once in a while. And actually, one of the specific goals of this particular program is to encourage students to continue on, perhaps think about getting a bachelor's degree in a technical area, and maybe even continue on to graduate school. At the very least, getting them interested and excited about the sorts of opportunities that they can have with NASA. And so part of the project is to bring students in what we call the NASA pipeline. So get them trained in technical areas that might be of interest so they could potentially be employed by NASA and or companies that work with them. And certainly seeing if they will continue on, transfer into an engineering program or another technical program is one of the goals of the project. And so many of the students have expressed interest in continuing on with their education after they finish at Western. And so some have specific plans, and some are kind of waiting to see how their future unfolds, too.
That must make you proud.
It's very neat. And one of the other great things about the Wisconsin Space Grant Consortium is that we do have a very, very diverse membership. There are something like 40 different organizations that are part of it. So many of the UW universities, some of the private colleges in Wisconsin, and several aerospace-related companies are all part of this consortium. And so for our students, part of this TAP program, it opens up a lot of different possibilities and doors for them to explore.
So I wanted to make sure I had some details correct. Is Western the only school that's participating in the TAP program itself currently, or are there other schools across Wisconsin?
Very good. Yeah, there are. Right now, I think there are 4 or 5 2-year colleges in as part of the Wisconsin Space Grant Consortium. And in the TAP program, we are one of 3 colleges.
Okay. Is that with the College of Menominee Nation and UW-Fox Valley coming into play?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. And so they're doing their own TAP research, or, you know, they have their tethered blimps up in the air, and are they looking into other projects then and focuses?
Yeah, they are. At the College of Menominee Nation, they have a very strong focus on sustainability. And so they have a sustainable forest up there as part of their land and area. And so they're going to be doing forestry health monitoring. So they're going to use some thermal imagers, cameras, and some other instruments to take a look at their forest. They're going to look at the different types of trees that they have, the different types of foliage. They're going to try to monitor the health over a series of months or years. And I believe that they're going to work with some other groups on similar studies at different regions around the U.S. So they have a very environmental focus to their experiment. And at UW-Fox Valley, their experiment is going to focus on atmospheric health, I believe. So they're going to be looking at a variety of gases and pollutants and things like that in their area. So they're going to look at atmospheric conditions and monitor industrial emissions and things like that.
Well, it just seems very exciting for all everyone involved in all these projects.
Yeah, and it's allowed us to have a quite wide range of interests and experiments that are tailored to each one of the locations, and it's really, really very, very neat. So the teams and the teams from the 3 colleges are working together a little bit, sharing experiences that they have. Some of the instruments that we use are similar across the program, and some of them are specific to each of the experiments. But they've had a chance to collaborate with each other as well as many other folks locally.
Mike, is there anything else you want to talk about in regards to the research or this project overall?
One last thing I guess I would mention is, and I've hinted at this already, but one of the other really great opportunities that this program provides for our students is an opportunity to collaborate with a variety of different people. So our team, specifically at Western, of course, has had a chance to work with members from the other 2 teams. They have had a chance to reach out to locally people here in La Crosse at the DNR, at the La Crosse County Sheriff's Office, which helped provide us with one of our, essentially a radar gun, that is our microwave transmitter. And we've also worked with different departments at Western, who we, those students and I, may not have had direct contact with otherwise. And so it's giving them a great opportunity to network with other people and collaborate and really kind of get that whole feeling, which is, a really nice addition to the curriculum that they already get at Western.
Mike Ladoc is a physics instructor at Western Technical College in La Crosse. He's also the faculty mentor for the Tethered Aerostat Program, or TAP, which gives students experience in doing research with aerospace tools like mini hot air balloons. The TAP program is part of the NASA-funded Wisconsin Space Grant Consortium, which Western has been a part of with other schools for some 9 years already. Ladoc spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCullough. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. This week's production team includes Maureen McCollum and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to the Wisconsin Space Grant Consortium and the Tethered Aerostat Program. That and more on our website, WPR.org/newsmakers.